Blazor WebAssembly Architecture with Jeff Fritz.
The Azure DevOps Podcast is a show for developers and DevOps professionals shipping software using Microsoft technologies. Each show brings you hard-hitting interviews with industry experts, innovating better methods, and sharing success stories. Listen on to learn how to increase quality, ship quickly, and operate well. And now your host, Jeffrey Palermo.
Welcome to the show. I'm Jeffrey Palermo, your host. And make sure to check out www.azuredevops.show for past episodes and show notes. And the goal of this podcast, as always, is to empower you and your teams with the information that you need to move fast, deliver consistent quality using the .NET ecosystem, and run your software systems with confidence in Azure. And for those of you running .NET and Azure user groups, I've been doing a lot of online video presentations. And if you run one of those groups, I'd love to give a presentation for you. Just last week, I gave a presentation for the group in Perth in Australia. A lot of fun. Now, ClearMeasure, who makes this podcast happen, is a software architecture company that empowers .NET teams to be self-sufficient and able to deliver world-class results. And so if we can help, please get in touch. And if you are a .NET developer and would like a path to become an architect, that we are hiring. Just apply on the website, clearmeasure.com. And finally, a lot of you are checking out the new Architect Tips video podcast. And remember that if you have a question you'd like answered on that show, you can submit one at architecttips.clearmeasure.com. I'm really excited for today's guest. It is none other than Jeff Fritz. And we haven't had Jeff on since show 30-something. Jeff Fritz is an experienced developer. He's a technical educator and PM on the .NET team at Microsoft. He founded the Live Coders team on Twitch and regularly, as in really regularly, live streams builds of websites, fun applications, really cool stuff. And you can follow Jeff for more .NET and .NET Core, .NET 5, and Visual Studio content on Twitch, on Twitter, all at C-Sharp Fritz. And we'll include the links to his Twitch and his Twitter channels directly in the show notes for you. So, Jeff, welcome back to the show. How are you, sir?
Oh, I'm doing great. Gosh, I didn't realize I was on show 30-something. It matches my age, so it works out perfectly.
Right. That's almost 2 years ago.
Oh, my gosh. Has it been that long?
52 weeks in a year.
Wow. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
So it's good to be back.
Awesome. So there's a ton of people who are already familiar with you because of all the content you put out and, you know, audience of your own. But you know, for those who are kind of becoming acquainted with you for the first time, I like to, you know, have our guests just tell their story, the abbreviated story of you're doing a whole bunch of stuff now, but what are the meaningful events that kind of put you what you're doing now?
Oh my gosh. I'd be remiss if I didn't call out Tech Ed 2000, was it 2008? I think it was 2008 where I met you you were giving a talk on ASP.NET MVC and said, hey, why doesn't somebody come up in here, show us a little bit of code? And you called me out of the audience. And that was one of the first steps I took into speaking and getting on the speaking circuit. I was like, wow, I could do this. And I talked to my local user groups and the region, found my way into Tech Ed and eventually working at Telerik. Made my way over to Microsoft, and about 3 years ago, I got really just tired's the wrong word. I got writer's block and was having a hard time blogging. And a friend said, hey, you know what? You'd be pretty good doing a podcast or something like that. And another friend said, hey, why don't you check out this live streaming thing? And we're about 3.5 years later. No, not quite, but it's more than 3 years later. And I've been, streaming on Twitch 3, 4, 5 days a week sometimes, and just having a blast writing code, answering questions from folks, really taking that next step in developer radio. For me, it's just amazing to have that interaction and to make mistakes in front of people. That is scary. But when you when you make mistakes and you can make fun of it and solve it together, it's a heck of a lot of fun.
Yeah. Well, it made me think of woodworking. You could say as you're whittling down something or shaving off something or cutting off something, you could say, oh, I made a mistake because I didn't make the final cut the very first time. But because we know it's part of the process, we know it's not really a mistake. It's just the way things are done.
Oh, yeah.
It's a mistake to ship it in front of the customer and tell the customer it's finished. And then the customer says, hey, your stuff doesn't work. That's the mistake.
What are you saying? What are you saying? Yeah, you don't want to be doing that.
But for context, there's in the stats of the recent developer surveys over the last year show that our industry has doubled in the last 7 or so years. And so when you harken back to TechEd 08, I just want to say that the current Microsoft Ignite conference, the parent of that used to be called Microsoft TechEd. Yeah. And so if you've never heard that term, that's kind of where it came from. They kind of renamed the Showcase Technology Conference to Ignite.
Yeah. Yeah. Tens of thousands of people attend that conference. It was in Orlando when we were doing in-person conferences. And they canceled the one that we were supposed to have this past year in New Orleans, I think it was supposed to be. And, but huge number of attendees. And of course, gosh, the virtual conference biz has, it's been interesting over the past year seeing how that's led things.
It'll be back though. It'll be, I mean, especially the southern states. I heard an announcement from the Texas governor today. One of the counties just north of the Austin Capitol, they finally reopened all the different class of businesses, including bars and nightclubs. Nice. And so things are, I mean, you see signs. It'll happen again. We will have the conferences again.
Oh, yeah.
So
for those of you that are listening, you might not know this, but Jeff and I are both wearing masks and social distancing about half a country away. I'm kidding.
Yeah, my mask looks like a Shure Beta microphone. No. But hey, as long as you have that decent internet connection.
Absolutely. Good. And my kids are doing virtual schooling, and I mean, they've been at that now for almost a year, like, learning from home, and it's worked out well for them. They understand it and they can deal with it. But what they're growing frustrated with is they've missed the social interactions of, right here in the States, right? Fall football season, high school football season, and looking at homecoming and prom coming up, and they're not going to have those. So, yeah,
I take for granted how blessed we are in this part of Texas, because you're right. There are so many places where nothing's going on. And here I look and my boy had a little league flag football game this past Sunday, but that's not happening everywhere.
No.
And that's, it's tough.
It is.
All right, well let's get into some techie stuff, because there's a lot of cool stuff that you're working on, you stream so much of it on Twitch, but Blazor got a new great revision with the release of .NET 5.
And, oh my gosh! Yes. And
a lot of people are asking the question. Okay, I hear a lot of talk about Blazor, but can I count on it? Is it really ready for prime time, or do I need to wait for the proverbial version 3?
I hear those questions, and I think it's ready, right? Even the server side, Blazor server side was released with .NET Core 3.1 back in September of 2019, right? And great version. It's in the long-term support, runs fantastic on the server, does all the same things you can do in WebAssembly. So it's you know you've got at least support through 2022, 2023 for that version of Blazor. But yeah, WebAssembly just came out, right? We had the RTM, the release to the web, to the release to many, I think is what RTM is now, right? It's not release to manufacturing.
Yeah.
But
released to the CD printers.
Yes. I need a gold copy of that.
Right.
So we just saw that in the spring of 2020. We're a year in. Is it ready? Microsoft wouldn't have pushed this out and made this and a part of a .NET 5 release if they didn't believe it was ready. The performance is better. There's a full 2 years investment in the technology to make sure that it works well, to make sure that you have a good development experience. But we're only 2 years into this. When folks ask to compare Blazor WebAssembly with Angular or Vue, those frameworks have been around for 10 years. They're not an overnight success. They're not all of a sudden everybody's using them. They've been around for a long time. Mm-hmm. Let's give Blazor a little bit of breathing room here before we say it's the thing everybody should use. Is it ready for enterprise development? Is it ready for big app development? Oh yeah, absolutely. It's there. You can do all the great things with C Sharp in it that we've been building in our WinForms or WPF apps. It's great to be able to build an application that runs in every browser everywhere because it runs on HTML5 standard technology. So unless you've got a operating system with a browser that's older than your car, you can run it. Mm-hmm. So I've been running with it. I've been building some fun things. I love the idea of static web apps. I think taking that spa mentality of, you know what, I want to have all my user interface logic. I want to have as much business logic in the browser, on the client side, back to fat client technologies and architectures. That puts us in a real interesting space where we can minimize our server resources. And when we think about using Azure Functions as a server resource, and they're being used by consumption, and they're being charged by consumption, by execution of those Azure Functions. Now we're talking. Now we've got something interesting where I'm not using raw processor on a cloud server. I'm just being charged for how many hundreds of thousands of times my functions execute. Okay, there's something there that we can really build on and pinch pennies and squeeze more value out of our cloud resources.
Now, there's two flavors to Blazor. So I think there's room for people to get confused about when you say, oh, I'm doing a Blazor app. They're kind of called the same thing, running completely on the server and then running half on the client and half on the server. Are both of those like totally different things, or in your mind, does the WebAssembly version start to supplant the first version, which was server side?
No, I think they both have a good place in how we build our applications. There's times that you want to have as much of that business logic on the client as possible, and there's times where you want to keep as much of that business logic secured and behind a firewall on application servers. And I'm thinking about regulated industries, finance, healthcare, these things where we really need to protect those resources. Yeah, you know what? Only ship those updates to the user interface like we do with Blazor server side. But if you're building something that's the new accounting system or that's doing order management, order tracking, you're building something that manages interactions with all kinds of other servers, why not do it as Blazor in WebAssembly, where offload all that network traffic into the browser, let it just handle and do the business logic there. So you end up with a very small server footprint, and you can end up with a really rich native experience in the browser that is very responsive. I like it.
Okay. And since, before we get too far into it, we always like to talk about how we would build, test, deploy, and operate an application of a certain type of architecture. So with the Blazor WebAssembly and also talk about some of the ones that you've kind of put out in the wild, what does that chain look like? What are the unique pieces that make it different from a different type of .NET app?
So there's a really great template that you can get on GitHub for what they call a Blazor static web app that works fantastic on Azure. So it It's a solution that contains three projects: API, client, and shared. API is just a series of HTTP triggered Azure functions. The client is Blazor WebAssembly with no server-side components. It literally builds and runs inside of an HTML page. And that shared component are those classes that you're going to share, that you're going to transmit back and forth from server to WebAssembly. So real nice, simple template that you can clone and create your own GitHub repository, download those resources, spin them up in your favorite editor. Maybe it's Visual Studio Code, Visual Studio 2019, VI, whatever, and build and work with on whatever environment you like. I've had a great experience building with Visual Studio 2019, Visual Studio Code on my Linux laptop, and rolling out features because I commit them into GitHub. And the beauty of this template is I can connect it directly to an Azure Static Web App deployment in my Azure portal as I go and create. And there's a great set of instructions for these. I can give you a link if you want to include it in the show notes. It's just a panel you fill out on Azure when you create the application. At the end, you tell it, well, here's my GitHub repository to deploy from, and it wires up, creates a GitHub action for you, and commits it into your GitHub repository. Now, whenever I open a pull request, it creates a stage slot on that service, on that Azure Static Web App service, for my pull request. So I can go to that instance and review everything, make sure it's working properly, merge in the pull request, and it deploys to my main branch immediately. Love it. Oh my goodness. So I end up with a very nice process that develops, commits into GitHub. I set up my branches appropriately, however I'd like. Do the pull request so I can test out my merges live in Azure. And when they pass, commit the merge and it will rebuild and redeploy to main. I love how simple it is to do the right thing now with that model of deployment.
Okay. So we've got a process that's running in the browser that's just from a get to this Azure Static website.
Yep.
And then it's calling out to some APIs.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about where they're running and how the two talk to each other.
Sure.
Is the authentication automatic? Do you have to roll in some tokens? What should people expect with that connection?
So when I deploy and run this application, it's serving HTML and all of those Blazor DLLs for WebAssembly. It's serving them static into the browser. So highly cached, there is no processing happening, but they make their requests back to an API, which is actually a Azure function that lives in the same application space as the static web app. It's serving those static files natively, no big deal, but it makes requests into these Azure functions that are configured with HTTP triggers. So when they have a get, hey, go get the data for the opening page. Well, it receives it and just returns an action with, returns a payload with whatever data it is that I want to present. My Blazor app receives those formats and paints the screen appropriately. Just like you would if you were doing things server side with ASP.NET, PHP, some other technology like that, no problem. It's just throwing that wrinkle in of, just like with a JavaScript-based single-page application, we're doing that formatting and processing over on the client. So
okay.
Then we end up with some interesting side effects and side benefits of that. Maybe we want to use things like Azure Storage and cache out some of that data. You know what? Gosh, we're delivering the same data to the front page all the time. Instead of having it hit the function, why don't we have it hit and request data out of Azure Blob Storage? We'll just write the JSON out to disk once every 5 or 10 minutes. And instead of requesting the data and being hit with an Azure function charge for execution and requesting from whatever database, why don't I just load it right from that JSON file on disk Now I've got another static piece of content that's sitting out there that I can load. I can set expires headers on those and let it appropriately come into my application. I don't do any business logic on it on the server, just cache the data. So now my Blazor application becomes a little bit more of, well, I'm just going to go fetch these couple pieces of data, stitch them together, and my functions turn into, well, there's a couple functions that I stood up on the side that run on a timed basis or when things arrive in queues and we need to do some back office processing, some business logic, go calculate, put that stuff in the database, but then write these cache files out to disk so that my Blazor app ends up just stitching together from various caches the data to present the application.
Okay. Now, if whether or not we're going to blob or API, at some point there's a transaction that's going to happen.
Sure.
A post
sure.
instead of a get.
Yep.
How does the API know that it's coming from your Blazor WebAssembly process as opposed to maybe a rogue person on the net?
Sure. So, right, we use things like cores to ensure that, first off, the static content that we're serving is only coming to those folks that are referred from my application. But we can turn around and we can do security going back into those applications, go back into the Azure functions. I pass some tokens around. I do some authentication that goes through actually OAuth processes. And I stash some tokens inside the service so that I know these are the people who are already logged in. That also minimizes some of the privacy concerns because I know you're logged in over here on service X, and I store tokens appropriately that correspond to that, that say, okay, here's the token that came in from that came in from Jeff, and we're going to make sure that we attach that to his credentials, and we don't have to worry about maintaining any password information, anything like that. I can pass around that authority easily inside of my application without having to store any of that other information. So it works out nicely to just offload things and do OAuth processing inside of Blazor. Just receive those tokens back and hand them off to my functions for storage and for the ability to connect up authorization now that I know you're authenticated.
Now, the template that you mentioned, the Visual Studio template that you mentioned has the kind of getting started project. Does it already have that stuff baked into it, or do you need to apply an additional pattern on top?
You need to apply the additional pattern. So the template really comes with it. It comes with it's not the weather sample that comes with it, but it comes with some very simple configuration to just get data out of an API and paint it on the screen. It's very simple. But you take a couple steps with it and you start to realize how much power you have when you can break up and take advantage of Azure functions and their ability to really scale. I don't want to say infinitely, but there is a tremendous amount of pressure you can put on Azure functions with HTTP triggers before you start to feel a little bit of a problem there, right? I haven't. In the interactions I've had with functions, I haven't seen a point where, you know what, you need to put more processor on this because you're being charged per execution there.
Yeah.
It's not something I've had to dig into yet.
Many thanks to our podcast sponsor, Clear Measure. Clear Measure is a software architecture company that empowers clients' development teams to be self-sufficient, moving fast, delivering quality, and running their systems with confidence. Whether starting a new project or developing new technologies or techniques, Clear Measure sets up your team to deliver world-class results. Learn more at www.clearmeasure.com. Clear Measure, empowering software delivery.
Now, I want to recognize something that we've had a lot of guests talk about, containers on the podcast.
Sure.
But the architecture that we're talking about doesn't seem that it intersects with deployments via container. We got the WebAssembly process. We got however many little Azure functions running around doing stuff. Yeah. We got blob storage. Maybe we've got a relational store, a reporting store. So just kind of fast forward yourself some number of years into the future. Is this path heading towards containers, or is containers for something else? Whereas this path is, hey, you know what? We don't even need to think about containers because it's even simpler than that.
It's even simpler than that. I don't think I need to think about containers because I'm literally pulling just a bunch of APIs and stitching them together. Whether it's blob storage, it's connecting to a relational database like you were mentioning, or I'm using a little bit of Azure Search, that's just another API endpoint. Mm-hmm. So, right, if I think about at some point dialing in cognitive services, well, that's another API endpoint. Do I really need that when I can just spin up another set of functions? Sure, I could deploy those functions as a Docker container and scale and manage that on my own. But there's an advantage to having that that function service out there that is scaling and is managing the workload on it appropriately. And I don't have to think about that. If I use containers, now I get into something like Kubernetes and having to orchestrate that and manage that, you know, how many of these do I have available and how many of those and scaling and configuring that. There's a level of sophistication there that certainly there are applications that need that. But for some of the little things that I'm building that serve a purpose for a little bit of interaction, you know, to provide some value, some business value, I don't need that level of sophistication inside my applications.
Mm-hmm. So now let's talk about compatibility for a minute, because this is a new architecture and people are used to, HTML and JavaScript, and it's supported sure. supported in a broad array of computers, including now we've got a Silk browser and a Firefox browser app on Fire TV and Roku. And now it's like, how many things can you have a little program running?
Sure.
What's the compatibility level of Blazor WebAssembly now that you know of?
So Blazor WebAssembly runs on top of WebAssembly, which is standard in HTML5. So some of those other browsers that you mentioned, I haven't looked at whether it runs on Silk. I haven't tried Firefox on Fire TV, but these other browsers should support WebAssembly. It should run there because it's downloading and running a .NET 5 runtime in the browser that's been compiled for WebAssembly. It should work there. It works great on the mobile devices, mm-hmm. iPhone, Android. Works fantastic in those browsers. Chrome, I haven't seen any problems with Linux-based browsers. Really, we're in a good place with this where we can step back. And like you were saying earlier about server side, if I got to a point where, you know what, there wasn't compatibility, if it wasn't working in the places that I need it to be, I could convert to run Blazor server side, redeploy my application on Azure App Service, and instead of being that static application with functions, well, I can still run the functions and run with Azure App Service mm-hmm. and have the application being generated and managed server side. Okay, now I've got to worry about scaling that and managing against the pressures of when various I've got to manage against when the network traffic comes through and scale up and down appropriately and manage the number of machines that are running, maybe even set up a backplane to be able to handle the communication across all of those various applications. That's fine. That's an option that I can go to if it doesn't give me the support that I need. But for the folks that I've talked to who are my user base, who are the folks interacting with my applications, we're in fine shape. We don't need to go and rethink how those applications work.
Mm-hmm. Now you have a few projects of your own that are live, right? Tell us about a few interesting ones.
So the big one that's really grabbed my attention, I've been working on it now for just over 2 months. It's an application that I call KlipTok, KlipTok. And this is an application that it synchronizes with Twitch to present Twitch clips with those social media features that we all enjoy, being able to like and comment and troll on other people's content, right? So this is a Blazor static web app with a series of functions that runs behind the scenes, a little bit of Azure Search, a MySQL database, a bunch of queues, a service bus hanging out behind the scenes, and it's loading and presenting Twitch clips as they're being made available by creators from Twitch. It's all Blazor WebAssembly. It's all Azure on the back, front to back. It's all C Sharp, and it's handling tens of thousands of records. Thousands of people are on the website checking it out and watching clips all the time. So we're in a good place with this. It's still growing. I still refer to it as a public beta, but we're slowly adding features. See, once a week I'm on stream and hey, this week we're going to add, I added dark mode over the weekend. I mean, I couldn't believe, right? It's something so simple. It's just a bunch of CSS.
Right.
I want dark mode. Okay. So you can go there now and there's a dark mode button that you can set up in your profile, or if you're not logged in, it's right next to the about pages up at the top. Fine. You know, it's something simple that I can add and learn about, not just learn about, but on my stream, I can teach people about considerations when you're building for scale, mm-hmm. when you're building and you want to take advantage of some of these Azure services that, you know what? They're free. Why not use it? The search yeah. service, so you can search for a channel. I'm using a free instance of that. It holds 50 meg, but I'm storing tens of thousands of Twitch channels in my Azure search. I'm storing tens of thousands of Twitch channels in my Azure search index, and I'm barely touching a couple meg. So I'm going to be able to store millions of records in there and still be in the free service threshold. Mm-hmm. Fantastic. Keep going on that. I use Azure Front Door in front of this to do a little bit of caching and redirection. It's a neat way for me to be able to explore all these cool features in Azure and do cool things and explore and really get into some of the edges of how to build with Blazor.
Mm-hmm. And this is public, right? People can go to it now?
Yep, it's public. I call it a public beta. As of the time of this recording, I think I have it's public beta version 0.13. So every week or so, I go and increment the number like, oh, yeah, we finished this feature. Let's increment that number so folks look and see, oh, here's what's changed. And I've got an about page there that shows all the features that we've been building along the way.
So, okay, so cliptok.com with K-L-I-P-T-O-K. All right, challenge for the listeners out there. Go out. I want you to pull this up and test it on the Roku browser, on the Fire TV browsers, and just any other weird computing device that you can tell, and just report back which ones, you know, worked like a champ and maybe any that have any compatibility issues, just so we know. Go ahead and use C Sharp Fritz on Twitter, and you can message me as well, at Jeffrey Palermo. Let us know what you tried it on and how broad we have, you know, automatic compatibility for at this stage.
Oh, yeah.
We know it works on regular computers and phones and all that stuff.
Cool. So. Oh, yeah. Let's hear what they have to say. I'm interested to hear that feedback. I actually had a bunch of folks wrote to me last night. It was like 3 a.m, 4 a.m, Eastern time here in the States. I got these messages. Oh, see, Blazor isn't ready for prime time. CliptalkTalk's down and they're sending me screenshots of services and working. I'm like, what the heck is going on here? So, right, Jeff, tell me if you haven't seen this before. So I go and I look at my Azure services. They all stopped because I hit my cost boundary.
Oh, you had a quota subscription.
I'm yeah. like, oh. So, all right, yep, turned up because I'm getting so much data, right? I'm hitting the boundaries of, yeah, I've got more data. I've got to pay more to store more data. So, okay, fine, lift the limit, and everything started working. Literally, mm-hmm. five yep. minutes later, yep. everything's working just fine again. But I was like, oh, I hit the quota. So,
well, when you're doing these beta apps, these test apps, I have found it's helped so much to have it in a subscription that does have a budget ceiling attached to it, because more than once I've come to a point where that's happened and then I looked at it and then I realized, oh shoot, if I'd have just left it over the weekend and coming on Monday morning, it would have been several thousand dollars of usage charges. Oh, budget. Thank the Lord. You saved me.
Right. It shut it off for me. Thank you. It's
until you tune the architecture.
Exactly. And I had tuned it. And really the thing that's costing me the most right now is Front Door. And right, Azure Front Door, you get for free with a handful of rules that you can attach to it. That's fine. But I think I have 8 rules configured, because it's a static web app. And tell me if you've seen this before, right? If you deploy a static web app that's Vue or Angular or React, when you embed a link on Facebook so you can show something to your friends or on Twitter, you don't get the rendered page. So what I did was I pre-render the pages.
Yes. You have to pre-render.
And I stash them in Azure Storage as HTML. So my Front Door, when it sees a request come in from one of the search engine crawlers, it sends them to the exact same address, but it actually is a static HTML page sitting in Azure Storage.
Yes. Yeah. And I think that not just static pages, but this also happens on Blazor server side. We've seen the sharing to social media. It's the same thing. There's a URL, but nothing comes across because the crawlers don't execute the actual page. And therefore, there may be a picture header that it would, but it just, none of that stuff comes through. No. This generic, oh yeah, you shared a URL. Thanks.
Right.
So you have to, if you're going to have shared pages on this architecture, I think of it as just as if you were going to share a page that was a screen on a native iPhone app. Okay. Yeah. You need a HTML page that is shareable. You need a landing page that is shareable, not a screen that happens to be deep linkable inside an application.
Absolutely. You want to have all those open graph APIs, right? Defined, you know, here's the title, here's the name, here's the image to show, so that it shows up well and then becomes better for the search engines to be able to see as well.
Yeah. And that's, you know, as an industry, we're getting back more and more to native or rich client applications, whereas we've had a whole generation of developers grow up on web for everything. Yeah. Even a lot of mobile tuned applications are still just dynamic websites. And the Angular, React, Vue is getting into some of those, and you can see it on forums where they're like, hey, I got this problem. Well, yeah, because you got a JavaScript smart client app going on there. And it's a different architecture. And I guess us old geezers now that remember when rich desktop applications were still really, really commonplace, we see, hey, it's coming full circle. All those patterns that were really prevalent there, well, they're useful again because we have this architecture again.
I think about the social media apps, really, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, these are all effectively web browsers in your phone that have a little bit of notification mechanism sort attached to them, but they're just serving all the data they're receiving from a web page, website.
Yeah.
And they do these as websites, but the app is nothing more than just a rich native app that is presenting and showing data the same way. You're absolutely right.
Now I'll give you've done Clip Talk just with your own spare time for a little bit, but I'll give another anecdote just about developer productivity with Blazor and what I've witnessed and the projects that I've been a part of in an architect role. And I can attest that for C# developers, it has been a long time since I've seen a programming model that pulls out this much productivity from a development team, just the pace at which things can be brought online with Blazor. That's what excites me, because the architecture's solid. It works. It does its job. with no weird side effects or hiccups, but it's just productivity on turbocharge mode for existing C# developers.
Oh my gosh, yes. I can't agree with you more. I'm looking forward to more improvements that we're going to see in the tooling. We see there's an experimental Razor editor for Visual Studio. We're seeing the same editor in Visual Studio Code. It's improving. It's getting better. It's not easy to write this one because when you think about Blazor, is that mashup between, gosh, it's like four or five technologies between C#, the HTML editor, JavaScript, CSS, and all of the Razor idiosyncrasies that happen in there. So there's a lot that they're juggling to make that thing work. And I'm really excited to see where this goes. And it leapfrogs us to that next level of productivity when we have that editor working much, much better.
Mm-hmm. Now I will make a plug for Carl Franklin's Blazor train. We have just developers who are kind of getting into their first Blazor application. We're telling them, hey, take a day or two and just plow through all of the videos that Carl Franklin, just do a search for Blazor train. You'll find it. Carl's a fantastic teacher. Mm-hmm. Coming out of just watching those videos, we've seen existing C# developers know exactly what to do.
Cool. Oh, yeah. He's done a great job there. I've been on one or two of those episodes. It's really good
stuff. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, you have. All right. Well, man, this is a great, great episode. Thanks for coming on the show again. A lot of great information. And I know a lot of our listeners are going to be going and checking out Clip Talk and reporting back what they tested it on.
Oh, thank you so much. It's great to be here. And let's do this again soon.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Well, thanks, Jeff. And dear listener, keep shipping.
You've been listening to the Azure DevOps Podcast, a show for developers and DevOps professionals shipping software using Microsoft technologies. Go to www.azuredevops.show for show notes and other episodes. On behalf of your host, Jeffrey Palermo, and our sponsors, thanks for listening, and may God bless you.